connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
A computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
Submitted for the approval of the 0 o'clock AM Club. The guy who had different microphone quality. Once there was a guy, and his microphone was different than the others. It was of a different quality, one might say.
Ooh, this is giving me, I can't say chills, I can't say goosebumps. This is giving me hives.
Ooh. That actually flows right into my next story. The guy who got honey one time, but a bee didn't like it.
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm sure bees really don't like the whole, like, sort of, like, all the information spying and collecting that honey does, you know? It's like, yeah, bees probably wouldn't want honey to know where they shop all the time online.
This might be a little embarrassing, actually, but today's episode of me coming over and telling stories to the 0 o'clock AM Society, I mean club, is sponsored by honey.
Sorry, we are a not-for-profit club, which is to say that we do not take any sponsors and we make no money. So I'm going to have to ask you to leave very politely.
Oh, well, that's okay. I guess I'll go back to my YouTube channel with a million subscribers.
Have fun with that. We're over here sticking to our roots and our guns.
Ah, gosh. Oh, man. Oh, sorry. All these roots are really sticky. And we have a bunch of guns lying around?
Yeah, that's for self-defense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't miss anything important, did I? I didn't miss, like, a really famous YouTuber or anything.
Actually, Markiplier did stop by, but he was only asking directions to the nearest Nintendo store. I told him there's only one, and it's in New York. And he said, where are we now? And I said, not New York.
Damn. That, I wish I could have met Markiplier. I could have asked him, you know. I could have been like, yo, do you want this 87-inch donut? And he would be like, no thank you, I'm Markiplier.
True. But hey, Hyper-Realistic Mario came back.
Ah, sweet, I love Hyper-Realistic Mario.
Hello, it is me, Hyper-Realistic Mario.
Yeah, he actually has a story he wants to tell us, isn't that right?
Yes, it is I, a Hyper-Realistic Mario. I have a story for you. It is submitted to the approval of the 0 o'clock AM Club, the Heffalumps and the Woozles.
Oh god, I can't stay here, I need to get out.
Oh no, oh god. So Hyper-Realistic Mario, that one's too spooky, way too spooky.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I think we have to go back to the other one of the two guys with the podcast of the varying microphone qualities.
Yeah. Sorry, Hyper-Realistic Mario. But don't worry, we will keep you. You can stay there, of course. Just, you know, sip that really long glass of water, and you know, we'll just have you as callback material, maybe in a later episode.
We'll call you back.
That's true. He will get a callback.
Mm-hmm. But in the meanwhile, we have myself, Matt.
Me, myself, Matt, and me, myself, Galen,
and,
the co-host.
And this is, of course, NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. And I'm extremely excited for today's topic. This has been incredibly cathartic in, like, the truest sense of the word.
Yes. So this one is very close to Matt's heart. Mm-hmm. And over the past week or so has become very close to my heart as well.
Yeah, this game is incredible. So we are talking today about Piglet's Big Game, and I'm going to go straight to the fact corner here.
The fact corner.
So Piglet's Big Game was released in 2003 on the GameCube and PS2. As a tie-in with the movie, Piglet's Big Movie. Now, the movie follows Piglet as he runs away from home, feeling useless, and the other characters then tell stories about how much Piglet helped them, and work together to bring Piglet back home. It's sort of an anthology movie. However, this game is much closer to Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day, which is another sort of Winnie the Pooh anthology movie that was released, I want to say, in the 60s. That one involved a bunch of different stories, but one of them was it gets really windy and rainy and stormy, and Tigger tells Pooh about Heffalumps and Woozles, causing Pooh to have a dream sequence about Heffalumps and Woozles. And that was the, like, origin of these creatures, Heffalumps and Woozles.
They are very confusals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they're like monsters that Tigger says will steal Pooh's honey and stuff like that. And it's very like the Pink Elephants bit. It's like they did that again, but with Winnie the Pooh. Very like nightmare sequence.
Yeah, it's kind of fun too, because like the whole thing with them is they don't specifically like honey, but they like whatever you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that, you know, as a person who's on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z, I think if I met a Heffalump and they were like, I'll steal your copy of, like, SSX3 for the PS2, I'd be like, bro, you like SSX3? Can we be, like, friends?
Yes, befriend Heffalumps and Woozles. It's funny you mentioned that, actually. In much later Winnie the Pooh series, starting in, like, 2009 or so, they added a cute little Heffalump kid to the main cast of Winnie the Pooh. I believe its name is Lumpy.
Oh.
So they did befriend one. Anyway, so Piglet's Big Game is a survival horror game for kids.
Yes.
And the game did well enough that they decided to make a sequel called Pooh's Rumbly Tumbly Adventure, where you play as Pooh instead of Piglet. I'll get more into that in a second, but I really want to sort of give my personal history with Winnie the Pooh. So I'm a big Pooh fan. I watched a lot of Winnie the Pooh growing up, and you might be able to tell as we go through this episode, because I'll be referring to a lot of the different stuff in the games that call back to different movies and shorts. Never read the books, sadly, but it's funny because, like, Winnie the Pooh is obviously very cute and wholesome and kind of silly, but also it has a lot of things that scared me as a kid. Obviously, there's the Heffalumps and Woozles in this game, which I'll get to in a second, but there's also the Heffalumps and Woozles in Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day, and that was then recreated in the Winnie the Pooh dark ride at Disney World, which was very dark because it ended with a whole Heffalumps and Woozles bit that scared me. And the intro to some of the old Winnie the Pooh shorts showed, like, the real-life Christopher Robin's bedroom with stuffed animal versions of the characters, but they all looked, like, weirdly uncanny, and it freaked me out. I had to, like, close my eyes as a kid before it actually got to the main short, the main cartoon.
Yeah, like, it seems like they created stuffed animals sort of thinking, like, essentially working backwards of, like, you know, Winnie the Pooh is how Christopher Robin imagines these, so what would the actual stuffed animal necessarily look like? But as a kid, I can absolutely see you looking at, you know, the stuffed Pooh Bear and going, that's not Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
That's, whoa.
An imposter.
The imposter is... I can't
hey, Christopher Robin. Yeah, me and the guys were just going to install this new arcade machine inside the 100 Acre Woods. You want to come with?
Yeah, so there's all that. Even then, like, Winnie the Pooh is probably the only Disney franchise that I have, like, a hard connection with in that way. So this game, when it came out, you know, I was a little kid. There were other Winnie the Pooh games before this one. The one that we had was Tigger's Honey Hunt, which was a platformer where you play as Tigger.
That one I do remember as a child. I remember that vaguely scaring me, but not in a very specific way. Not in the way that Piglet's Big Game scared you. More just in, like, a very sort of generic, like, it was one of those things that would keep me up at night, sort of thinking about one of the levels of this game.
Mm-hmm.
I was also a kid who, upon booting up Tack and the Power of Juju after borrowing it from Blockbuster, after renting it from Blockbuster, and, like, getting the very first prompt to, like, turn the camera, got really scared, got really overburdened by the idea of being in control of the camera and turned off the machine.
That's honestly... That explains a lot as far as, like, forgetting how to play a game, quote unquote, and then going back and being like, I don't want to play this game. I don't remember how to play it.
Yeah.
Like, so this game, though, when it came out, I was still a babby, and I was like, hey, look, it's a Winnie the Pooh video game for the GameCube. Can we get it? And my parents were like, sure. And so we got it, and I played through, like, the first level, and then it started to get really scary, and then, like, my mom had to help play the game. And I think, basically, towards the end of it, my mom beat the whole thing. So thanks, Mom. Thanks for playing Piglet's Big Game.
Yo, shout-outs to moms everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's not even Mother's Day, but shout-outs to moms everywhere.
Yeah, especially, it's going to be my mother's birthday in about a week or so. So
nice.
Shout-out to my mom, too. You don't listen to this podcast, but, you know, just shout-out to you.
And shout-outs to the mom from Winnie the Pooh, a.k.a. Kanga.
You know, shout-outs to mom, as in Jimmy Neutron's mom as well. But, just, you know, in general.
But not shout-outs, whisper-ins to mom from Futurama. Maybe shout-outs.
Yeah, just shout-outs. Shout-outs everywhere.
Shout-outs to Mother, the game series.
But not shout-outs to Metroid Other M.
Yeah. Mother M.
Mother M.
Because if you take apart an M, it has, like, an I, a V, and an I. That's not a thing. So this game ended up giving me nightmares. It made me really scared. It scarred me for life. And so, like, nowadays playing it, obviously it's much less scary. And it's given me this huge sense of catharsis and overcoming childhood trauma.
Yes.
And now I'm ready to talk about it because it's so interesting. It's yes. So interesting.
This I am so genuinely excited to talk about this because I did not have this particular I did not have this childhood trauma with this game. I also so I not really a Pooh Bear fan. I just sort of, it just wasn't what I was into as a child. I remember having a Tigger sticker which I would look at when I was like 5, and in my 5-year old imagination brain, in the middle of the night, the Tigger sticker would like dance around with the little like butterflies around it. That was basically the extent of my like connection with Winnie the Pooh. Was I had Tigger stickers that were alive in my child brain. And so, you know, going through this, I did not catch a lot of these specific references, but I think because of that, I also sort of appreciated it a lot more from just a general game design standpoint of going, wow, a lot of choices were made in this game that are so strange, but I love them.
Yeah. So this game, just to give sort of a vertical slice of the mechanics, you play as Piglet and you are going into his friend's dreams and helping them out with their problems. And you do this in a survival horror sort of style where you go around these like dimly lit, very odd camera angles, no music, a lot of ambient noise.
Yes.
And you gather items and solve puzzles with them in a very sort of item A into hole B sort of style. But there are also monsters that make a lot of noise and shake the screen, and they will, if they see you, they will try to hunt you down and scare you, I guess. And so, however, if you are facing the monster, you can engage in combat with them. And combat in this game is handled by, essentially, there is a pathway that shows the distance between the Heffalump and Woozle and you. And you only ever fight them one-on-one, luckily. And they will slowly sort of walk towards you, depending on sort of what type of enemy it is. Some of them will move faster or slower. And there will be button prompts at the bottom of your screen that get more complex as time goes on, requiring either the B, Y, or X button on GameCube. I'm presuming that would be triangle, circle, and square on the PS2.
Yes.
And eventually adding in directional presses for the control stick simultaneously. I think Galen compared it to Tony Hawk tricks.
Yes, I compared it to specifically when you would manual on Tony Hawk in Tony Hawk and had to kind of like put in a little combination of buttons a little bit quickly. Although in this case, it's mostly just put in the button before they get to you.
Yeah, if you put in enough buttons, you do a scary face. Or a brave face, I think it's called, which will scare the enemy themselves. And each face does different amounts of damage. Enemies have different amounts of health depending on what level they are on and what type of enemy it is. And eventually your goal is to save all your friends.
Yes. The specific kind of framing here is that your friends
fall asleep kind of two by two. It starts off with Pooh and Roo, which I'm just now realizing rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into their dreams, and their dreams are, we're going to get to their specifics, but you know, they have some kind of problem in their dreams that they're trying to solve. And so it's a lot of, you know, find item A to solve problem B, which gives you item C, etc., etc. It is definitely made for children. It is, you know, not like exceptionally complicated, but it is a fun little scavenger hunt. I would say that the most unnecessary, but also I understand why it's there mechanic, is that you can collect cookies by just kind of like kicking the scenery and cookies come out. You need to collect enough cookies to get all of the brave faces that you can do. And so I understand why it's there as a mechanic, because you can't just sort of, you can't throw this and say, here's like a 3-hour game that'll be $60. But it is sort of the least engaging of the mechanics, is just collect enough cookies to get the next great brave face. But, you know, again, children's game, makes sense.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that you kind of have health, but not really. The first time a Heffalump or Woozle gets close to Piglet, the combat ends and Piglet becomes, like, scared a little. He comes kind of frightened, kind of worried, and this causes him to walk slower. And then you get a bit of time to run away from the enemy. And then the second time that happens, if Piglet is already frightened, he becomes really scared, and he runs much faster because he is like trying to peel out and run away from the monsters. And if he gets scared a third time while he is really scared, then he runs away to Christopher Robin. There are yes. these balloons with Christopher Robin's face on them, and if you interact with them, then he shows up to sort of give Piglet a pep talk, which heals you of all your scariness, all your fears. And so you can do this at any time, but if you're scared the third time in a row, then you are forced to go there.
Yes.
When you kill a Heffalump or Woozle, they drop a little potion that you can pick up, which signifies that you beat them. And then that's like tracked in your progress, your completion percentage.
I am curious, is that a reference to anything? Because
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's a lot of this game makes some internal logic, but like that is the one thing that I was expecting, like, I don't know, Gopher to secretly be the bad guy at the end, where he's like, Sonny, I've brewed a potion.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It might be something from the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, which was the 90s era, like Disney Channel, Disney Afternoon TV run.
Yeah.
I know that they had like a few Halloween episodes where they were like mad scientists, but I don't know if that really came from that. And it's been a while since I saw those. But I think as we go through each level, we'll talk more about certain mechanics as they're introduced, like the new enemies and whatnot.
Yes.
But I do really want to mention, again, the aesthetic design of this game, because that's one of the like huge things. Like,
yes.
When I tell people there is a Disney survival horror game featuring Winnie the Pooh characters, they're like, what do you mean survival horror? But it's not just that survival horror has to be scary to an adult. It's that there are certain conventions to like the design and the atmosphere of a game that contribute to it being survival horror. In this case, I said kind of briefly before, but this game has a lot of very dark lighting. It actually was praised on release for its real-time lighting, which I think is hilarious.
That's amazing, because like the lighting is very good, but it's also very scary.
Yeah. There's like very little music. Most of the time when music appears, it is to like be anxiety inducing.
Yeah, it's like low tubas to kind of accentuate the Heffalumps and such like that.
Yeah, or like there's chase sequences where you have to catch things, and it's like this very 7/4 time signature, like weird mess of a song. I also want to note the main menu music is like very loud. It has like a very short loop with a bunch of sound effects going all over the place, so it's very busy.
Yeah, yeah.
that is
probably the most critical I'll be, is that I think that the menus of the game are all diegetic, and that's really cute. And like, again, from the angle of this is a kid's game, sort of, you know, having the sound be like a bunch of bigger or smaller frogs that make little noises is really cute and makes a lot of sense to a child brain. But also as an adult who, like, whose ears got blasted out and who went, oh God, please, I just need this to be a little quieter. It was very having to, like, run around and find the one diegetic UI prompt that actually did anything was quite annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also this game loves, like, Dutch angles and weird camera angles. At least it feels like every level has one room that has just, like, the worst camera angle. That's, like,
yes,
at a weird sort of diagonal view. Like I said, very Dutch angle. A lot of rooms will kind of tilt and turn as if they're on sort of a sphere. Usually it's, like, the first room you spawn in. So, like, just look at the first room of Pooh's level and you'll see kind of what I mean.
Yeah.
It contributes to the dreamlike atmosphere a lot.
Obviously, we shout out socials at the very end, but I will just specifically say I streamed this game, as I may have teased last episode. I streamed this game with Matthew co-commentating, and I don't know if there is, I don't know if the VOD saved, but, like, oh my God. Some of the angles in this game, especially when you get to Eeyore's Dream, which Matthew was the most excited about, and I won't spoil yet, we're going to be talking about it. But there is one specific room that Matthew uses as an example, because it is straight up, like, it is from Eternal Darkness. There is definitely a one-to-one comparison from, like, Eternal Darkness or, like, Resident Evil, of just, like, the absolute wild angle that, like, accentuates how small Piglet is and how big and intimidating the room is. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Really quick before we go into the actual levels, I just want to bring up one thing, which is that Gopher is an NPC that you see in the menu itself. He is the, like, new game option. And fun fact, Gopher was not part of A.A. Milne's original books. Instead, he was, like, the first extra cast member to be added on posthumously. Pooh's level, Pooh's dream. Much like dream. Psychonauts, every dream is heavily tied to the personalities of the dreamer themselves. So
that's
Pooh,
not a joke.
So Pooh,
sorry.
Pooh, as we know, is a bit of a glutton, a bit of a sugar addict. And so his whole dream is filled with, like, candy and sweets. Like, you know, there's caramel rivers, there's chocolate fences and peppermint walls.
There's, like, big lollipop trees and such.
There's a giant cake in the very center that's an actual, like, building. So Pooh's level is sort of a slow burn. You start off and you meet Owl, and Owl is like, oh, hey, Piglet. Pooh is stuck over there. You should go help him. And then you go to the next room over, you kind of go down this wandering path, and you see Pooh stuck in some caramel, and he does not want the caramel, and he cannot leave the caramel. So you have to find a nearby, like, lollipop stick to use to kind of rescue him from that. The lollipop stick is right next to Pooh, so it's sort of just a very quick introduction to puzzles. And then you meet up with Pooh. He helps you destroy some cotton candy that's blocking the entrance to a layer cake building. This is sort of another introduction to be like, sometimes you have to talk to characters to solve puzzles. You go inside and then you find the first monster, the first Heffalump.
Yes.
Yes. You go inside this, like, circular room. The camera's pointed, like, straight down at you. And you just hear, like, the loud elephant trumpet. You hear, you see the screen shake and you feel it shake, and it's like, holy shit, this game got real.
It's so good.
Yeah, you go into a room with some birthday cakes, which may be a reference to that Pooh was Christopher Robin's first stuffed animal, but I'm not sure about that. It's really creepy. There's, like, a phonograph playing, like, muted music.
Yeah, there's a phonograph that's, like, playing muted music and, like, specifically skipping at, like, you know, a couple of bars, which is a tactic from fucking BioShock.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Or, what's it called? The Endless? Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
It's so... And, like, the room itself is really, like, dark. It's muted colors. I believe this room has a Woozle in it too, which is the first appearance of the Woozles. You get the Heffalump first and then the Woozle, as is tradition.
Mm-hmm. Something kind of funny is that, so a lot of rooms in each level will have a door that identifies that you have to kill a certain number of enemies to progress. And they're always shaped, or they indicate the animals or enemies you have to kill. And so, like, in the first room, you have to fight the Heffalump, and there is a wafer cookie with a Heffalump icon on it. And when you kill the Heffalump, it just breaks. It just crumbles.
Yes. This is going to be the first of many times we praise the level design as well. As we said, all the level designs are tailored to the specific characters, but that also goes on to repeat for, like, the repeated mechanic things. Every time you enter a room and it's like, you have to defeat all the enemies to pass, it is always, like, a diegetic thing that is blocking the door. It is always, like, in this case, it's a wafer cookie. In a later level, it's, like, you know, a little cardboard cutout in a paper crafty level. So, like, it is consistent, but it is always a new thing. It's not, like, a repeated asset that's, like, oops, it's blocked by a big magic force field.
Yeah, you know, the if you've seen the, like, you can't go that way Twitter account, they would have a field day with this game.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Eventually, you meet up with Rabbit, who is in his kitchen, and he's explaining that he doesn't have time to help you with poo, but he, like, gives you a key to his cupboard that has honey pots in it. So if you get a honey pot, then from there, then you can take it to the next room, which has just, like, a bee butt pooping out honey.
Yeah,
it's like a honey fountain.
It's an endless stream of honey.
Yeah.
Outside of a bee like striped thing.
Yeah, you could picture Pooh just kind of sticking his head under there and just gargling it, just like
Pooh getting, I'm sorry, the next words out of my mouth were about to be Pooh getting honey boarded.
The next words out of your mouth are going to be Pooh getting honey boarded. Nutty.
Oh no.
Okay, we did the joke.
Yeah.
So I do think that Rabbit's placement here is specifically a reference to a classic Pooh moment where Pooh breaks into Rabbit's house to steal honey and he gets stuck in the hole on the way out. And so Rabbit has to paint on Pooh's ass to make it look like a decoration. It's great. Rabbit and Pooh are just often like diametrically opposed. You know, Rabbit's very, like, neurotic, very everything has to be in its place. And Pooh is completely relaxed, willing to do whatever it takes to get honey, no matter the cost. And so they conflict very often.
Yeah.
And so I think something really fun about this level thematically is that Pooh could literally eat anything here, yet none of it is to his liking.
Yeah.
He could eat the caramel he's stuck in. He could eat the giant cotton candy blocking the way instead of having to melt it with, like, seltzer water. But no, he only wants honey.
This is also the start of a recurring theme, which is that people tend to be kind of surrounded by the things that they want, but, like, in a way that traps them, essentially.
Yes.
So, like, Pooh is literally stuck in the caramel in this instance. And when he, you know, when he is freed, he is, like you said, surrounded by treats, but only seems to want the honey. And because Pooh is, you know, kind of lazy, he doesn't actually, like, wants to walk to where the honey is.
Yeah, it's like a twist of irony, you know, that that characters, they're given everything they want, but they are unable to or unwilling to actually engage with it. It's very monkey's paw. That being said, there's not a whole lot else to say about this level. In the room with the honey bee fountain, there are like some chocolate sculptures, kind of like chocolate bunnies. But I think they're supposed to be Pooh's friends. They're very hard to tell, though, which kind of makes them a little weird.
Yeah, it's a little bit like shaky hands. There does seem to be like representations of other friends within the dreams, but it's a little bit shaky hands to the extent to which all of them are, like, 100% intended.
I think more than anything, though, Pooh and then Roo's level are both meant to be very cute and, like, fun themed as sort of an appetizer, you know, sort of easing you in. You can really tell that the point that I like stopped wanting to play the game was around the end of Rue's level.
Yes. So speaking of Rue's level.
Yeah.
So Rue's level is fun. You come in to his level and you're in his house with Kanga. And Kanga's like, oh, Rue ran off to his playroom and I haven't seen him all day. And so when you eventually get to the playroom, it turns out that he is literally stuck, locked inside of his playroom.
Yes. Not only that, but the ball he was playing with is trapped in, like, the ceiling?
Yes.
His playroom has this whole, like, sky diorama off to the side, and the ball is trapped in some clouds, and the ladder to reach it is broken. So, like, not only is he locked in his playroom, he cannot have fun there.
Yeah, he is locked inside the playroom, but without, and also without anything to distract himself.
Yeah.
Once again, being trapped by what you want most. Because when you go back to Kanga to get the key, she's like, oh, I'll look for it, but everything's so disorganized, because I've told Rue to clean up, and you end up having to kick everything in there to grab all the cookies, and then eventually she gives you the key.
Oh, which, by the way, one complaint I have is that the kicking is very finicky. You have to do it from, like, a certain angle for most objects.
Yes.
And you have to be facing it perpendicular. If you're, like, off by a little too much on either left or right, then it won't work, which led a lot of times to me trying to kick something, it not working, and then me assuming it didn't have any cookies.
Yes, and this is not just a bad design for children's game thing either. I, Galen, a 26-year-old man, did not know where there were, like, more kickable things in one of the dreams, trying to get, like, the last 5 cookies to unlock a brave face.
Yeah.
Because it ended up, like, one of the things that I had tried to kick earlier, which was, like, a shield on the wall or something, was actually kickable. I just didn't get the good angle for it.
Yeah. Now, it does... So, there is 3 map buttons, maybe 4 on PS2, I'm not sure, that show you sort of a map of the level, and that does show you whether you've completed the given, like, cookie count for any given room. If you've completed every cookie or found every cookie in a room, Piglet does a little triumphant little cutscene, and then it'll appear with an X on the map.
Yeah.
But yeah, for, like, cleaning up Kanga's house, it was a little tricky for me upon replaying. So the whole level is made of arts and crafts, which is pretty cute. Again, it's something that Rue seems to have fun with. What's interesting to me is that the outdoors are, like, recreated in full, and the main contention here, the main conflict, is that Rue is locked inside, which sort of makes me feel like he would much rather be outside anyways.
Yeah.
Also,
he wants to go outside playing with his ball, but unfortunately, he's locked inside, even though there's this large outdoor space.
Yeah. Also, he is on the complete opposite side of the level from Kanga. So, like, as far away as he could be from his mom. Kanga, by the way, does not have a nightmare.
Yeah, this is... I want to say this is the only time that Kanga actually appears outside of, like, the cinematics.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, there might be, like, a small thing in one of the later dreams, but I'm fairly certain this is the only one that has Kanga in it, which I suppose makes sense. If anybody would have Kanga in it, it would be Rue.
Mm-hmm.
So, a fun thing as well that this level introduces is that there's a moment where progress is blocked off to Piglet, but Tigger says, I don't remember what the specific thing is. I think it's, like, a gate and a key.
I think it's, like, a gate that you have to pull a pull tab.
Yes,
like a pop-up
that's
book.
It. And so Tigger is behind the gate, and so Tigger is like, I'll go forward and pull the pull tab for you. And so you end up actually getting to play as Tigger, which is kind of fun. But the gameplay changes ever so slightly,
mm-hmm.
because Tigger cannot put on a brave face. And so this ends up being a stealth section with a really, like, really wide and really well-defined vision cones for all the enemies that Tigger has to, like, sneak around and not get caught by.
Yeah, so there are vision cones. If you get caught in one, then the enemy will run towards you and it's hard to outrun them. You normally sneak around very slowly, which does not make noise. You can also bounce by holding the A button, which does make a lot of noise, but you move much faster.
Yes.
So there is sort of a stealth mechanic there that's fairly well implemented. You have to sneak by a Heffalump, you sneak by two Woozles in a little corridor cubbyhole run. I wanted to mention that, so Roo and Tigger are pretty connected in Pooh lore. Roo really looks up to Tigger and sort of uses him as a role model. The Tigger movie, there is sort of a side arc about Roo wanting to learn how to bounce from Tigger. And that sort of goes into Roo's anxieties over how short he is, because he's a child. But his height and his inability to jump high are like reoccurring character traits. The way he works through that sort of limitation is a common character arc, and it is represented here because obviously if Roo could jump higher, he could just get his ball. So that sort of character arc he goes through often, that anxiety, is a central part of this level's story. Additionally, there is another part where you have to get a stick from Eeyore, and to do so, Piglet has to create some stairs. So Piglet too is sort of forced to feel the weight of having to like construct something. Basically, Piglet learns about accessibility.
Yes. So there's two little things I want to say. One, we're not going to necessarily go through the whole like section whenever you go play as another character in the future levels, because this is a recurring mechanic, is having to play as Tigger or Pooh. But I want to specifically mention the difficulty. It's not specifically hard, but I actually want to praise the game for the punishment, because if you do not complete the whole thing, you have to restart it from the beginning. I was expecting it to be like, you just restart from the specific stage you're on. No, you have to restart from the beginning, and I honestly think that's a really like good thing, because that's really in line with survival horror. Is like, in horror and in horror video games, you it's hard to have a meaningful punishment, because realistically a video game can be attempted as many times as possible, and so a lot of times what games tend to use as punishment is time. They make saving a limited resource, or they, you know, space out save rooms a whole lot. And so it's really interesting to me, just because it makes me think that they were actively looking at these things and going, well, we're not going to, you know, have a particularly terrible downside in this children's game, but we do want to see, like, what is a good punishment, quote unquote, for failing the challenge. And I think it's a really interesting little example of how they worked within the limitations of a children's game, but also what is essentially a survival horror game.
Yeah, it's really cool adjustment.
Yes.
So on your way to get that stick from Eeyore, there is actually a new enemy introduced, which is a bee Heffalump, and they fly fast, which is sort of their thing, and they get pushed back when you scare them.
Yes.
And this is kind of fun, because this is one of two enemies, like two variant enemies, that were present in the original Heffalump and Woozles bit from Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day.
Yeah, it's there are fun Pooh references to longtime fans,
mm-hmm.
which I would hope there would be, honestly, in a game like this.
Yeah.
But it is really cute to see them sort of getting inspired by and or just directly referencing things from older Pooh media.
Yeah. So you go through that, you help out Roo, but his ball is stolen by a magician Woozle, and you have to pass this door. The door is your sort of checkpoint, choke point that requires the brave faces. You
yes.
have to get all of them to pass through the doors. And it's so great, because while other characters have very rigid mouths, the doors have these like really wobbly, fluid mouths and eyes that kind of make them look like a Rareware character,
yes,
specifically
yes.
from Conker.
I specifically multiple times noted there's like a gear in Conker's Bad Fur Day at one point that like you have to get other gears for, and they make a joke. They make a very Conker's Bad Fur Day joke about it. But like it specifically looks like that gear where, like, the lower mouth is sort of, like, curved all the way up to give that, like, mean sort of frowny face look. And the way he talks is mostly just flapping the lower mouth. And it looks straight up like a Rareware character, and it's so good.
It's very jarring, but it's so good. And then the boss fight is three magician woozles in a row, who their gimmick is that every now and then they will stop to cover their eyes with their cape. And if they're covering their eyes, they can't see you, which means they can't be hurt. So yes. you have to time your button presses, either doing it really fast or delaying the last one.
That is also a recurring thing, is that the enemies of this game, as we've described the mechanics, you might have been sort of thinking, that is that it? But honestly, they do a really good job with, like, having the enemies of the game twist it in interesting little ways. In this particular example, like you said, the magician covers their eyes. There's also, like, later examples who will specifically do things with the display or, like, with the how the buttons look themselves. That kind of confuses things, essentially. It's surprisingly good. And again, it's a really interesting way of, like, thinking about it and thinking about the devs going, well, this is the limitation we have. What do we do with it?
Yeah. Also, I think it's funny that the magician woozles are here, because as we kind of discussed on stream, the hiding your eyes to protect you from monsters is a very childish thing to do.
Yep.
Which is fitting that the childish enemy is in the child's dream.
Yeah. This also... This game also follows the Dark Souls principle, whereby boss monsters will become normal monsters in later engagements. So now that you have seen the magician enemy who hides his eyes, you will see magician enemies later in later dreams that do the exact same thing.
Yeah. So after you beat Rue and Pooh's level, then Owl and Eeyore's dream open up, and I think I still want to do them in order from left to right, so the next one would be Owl.
Yes. Eeyore is the one that's very exciting about, but Owl is also quite fun.
Yeah. So Owl has lost his memory, specifically the book of memories he has, and so you have to go help him find it. His dream is sort of a... academic themed, like school themed. There is sort of a courtyard with a well, and from there there's a few branching paths. One of them leads to a library, one of them leads to more of a, like, school academy, and the other one is a tower that represents his treehouse. And by the way, just really quick, so the way you save the game is using a book with an ink and quill, which kind of appears again in the first room of the library as a foreground element. And I just want to note how frequently Winnie the Pooh media loves to remind you of the fact that it's from a book more than, like, any other Disney property. Because, like, you know, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Tarzan, Jungle Book, those are books. Those were, like, stories that were written. But they don't really get the, hey, look, isn't this a book? Wink to the audience treatment that Pooh does.
I guess it's part of sort of the magic of, you know, Winnie the Pooh being like, it's a children's animation or a children's imagination come to life. And so they like to constantly remind you, by the way, this whole thing is from a storybook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that...
you know, you've got like Kingdom Hearts where you have to get the pages of the book. And here, Piglet writes the book as he plays it.
What if you were friends with the bear, right? But turned out the whole thing was a book in the end. Would that be fucked up, mate?
No. That's how books work. It's like saying, oh, what if a minotaur was chasing you, but it turned out to be a book the whole time? Oh, wait, no, that is kind of a tricky one. So, yeah, Owl's Dream. It's really interesting to me because you can see all the different sort of like school subjects being represented. The library is obviously like literature and writing. There is a section with like a blackboard and some like rulers and a protractor and stuff like that that's meant to be math. And then there is a section that's like a treasure map that's meant to be geography. And then Owl himself, since he's in a treehouse with like photos or pictures of his ancestors behind him, that's supposed to be history. Not to mention that, so the actual sort of quest is you have to get two pictures of Owl's ancestors to put on the wall. That moves a thing blocking the door, and that thing blocking the door is a grandfather clock. Get it? Yeah.
It's really cute.
Yeah. The library introduces the poo sections, which are anti-stealth sections.
Yes. Poo walks into a room, his tumbly gets all rumbly, and then every enemy with it, every Woozle and Heffalump within a 500 meter radius just instinctively knows his location, so you have to fucking book it.
Yeah. It's pretty great. You have to learn how to kite enemies really well, especially towards the end of the game. But this one's not too bad as you go between bookshelves.
I would definitely rate this probably like, you know, middle of the road in Vampire Survivors likes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So once Pooh goes through that, he hits a switch that lets Piglet join in. Piglet is able to clean out all the enemies. In the last room of the library, there are two magician Woozles and a Woozle door that is like two sculptures of Woozles on a plank. And it looks like they're going to fall off or they're going to kill each other.
Yeah.
They're like locked in combat. It's like Battle with Sticks. My favorite Goya painting.
Yeah, and like when you hit
fight with cudgels, levers, that's what it's called.
Like when you hit the things that solves them, you have to hit two of them and it like crumbles them into dust.
Yeah, they die.
Yeah, they fucking die.
Something really cool is the next thing you have to do there is you have to solve a chess puzzle. And it's actually a chess puzzle, as in it is like a mate in one. And you have to find the move. It's yeah, really easy because you can only move two pieces and only one of them is correct. But it's still nifty that, like, oh, it's an actual chess puzzle.
Yeah. Hey, kids, you know chess?
Mm-hmm.
I also want to hit on a point that you mentioned, but I want to draw specific attention to it, which is that this happened with Tigger too. But when you clear out or when you complete a section as Tigger or Pooh, the enemies do not despawn. Piglet just comes in and then can brave face them away.
Yeah.
Which I find kind of interesting that it's like, it isn't like, oh, a temporary little thing. Piglet then comes in and has to like actually, you know, clear them out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pre-gaming you for the like thing that you're going to have to do with Piglet, which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Something kind of neat also about the chessboard is that there are two chess clocks. Or rather, one chess clock that has two clocks as per chess clocks. That's kind of neat. Also, so there is no white king on the board. There's only a black king. And you might be like, where's the white king? Well, Owl, upon losing his memory, he keeps forgetting Piglet's name. And so he calls Piglet Kinglet, which means Piglet was the white king the whole time. Go on, king.
go off, king.
Yeah. Also, there's an inkwell in one of the hallways that has a hidden Mickey on it.
Nice, nice. We love to see it. That's another fun, consistent Disney thing, is hiding Mickeys in things.
Yeah. Something kind of wild is that this level has a lot of, like, bottomless pits. You can't fall in them, but his treehouse, the, like, mathematics area, and that second room of the library both have these huge, plummeting bottomless pits with, like, bookshelves lining the walls all the way down.
Yeah, the specific end area where you when you get his Book of Memories is like a giant carpet that's over these bottomless pits.
Exactly.
And it's like, wow, that's a little terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, Owl lives in a treehouse. He is a bird, and so it's sort of high up locations. There is even a part where you kind of create a paper airplane. It's not really in the form of a paper airplane, from what I remember, but there is a puzzle involving a piece of paper and knocking it over a ledge.
Yeah.
In a little Rube Goldberg machine. So that's fun. So yeah, there's a lot of references to flight and heights. Come down now, they'll say. The last...
Light and Heights, which is basically what Kingdom Hearts is about.
Mm-hmm. The last main thing I want to say about Owl's Dream is that when you go into the room with the Book of Memories, you have to do this like timed challenge, which is incredibly anxiety inducing. So, for one thing, when enemies get close to you, there is sort of an alarm clock sound that starts playing, and there is an A button icon that flashes repeatedly, and this is because you can press the A button to disengage from combat if they haven't reached you. The alarm clock's very loud, I hate it, but then when you do these time challenges in the overworld, there'll be, like, you know, a number of things that you have to interact with in a short time span. It has a clock sound that slowly begins ticking up and ticking faster and faster until it finally goes full alarm clock. And the image for it is this really gnarly, like, piglet alarm clock.
Yeah!
I hate it.
Yeah! It's so weird.
There's, like, nothing like it.
Oh, man. This game is so, like, genuinely, we haven't even necessarily mentioned the brave faces, by the way. The faces that you unlock are faces that Piglet then performs. And, like, they're cute things. It's, you know, like, he pulls on his ears and, like, sticks out his tongue and stuff like that. And it's like, that's cute. That's whatever, you know. But, like, sometimes it's also like he pulls his mouth down and bubbles come out. And it's like, huh, that's kind of, like, that's genuinely a little upsetting.
Or, like, eventually he does, like, a bowl charge and the screen gets all red.
Yeah!
He becomes evil, yeah. Piglet.
The very last one you unlock is, like, his mouth gets really big, but, like, it's stretched, like, you know, like, four corners, and it looks like a predator mouth.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, I understand that it's, like, Piglet putting on the faces to scare the other things, but no enemy has a scare animation as scary as anything Piglet does.
Also note that when he learns the brave faces, he goes to, like, this, like, fortune teller machine, puts in the cookies like coins, and then another Piglet just shows up and, like, spins around and does the face. And it's supposed to be, like, a mechanical, like, puppet Piglet, but I'm pretty sure they did just use the same model as regular Piglet.
They did.
Yeah, it's very weird. I like it, but it's weird. But I like it because it's weird.
Yeah, this is a very fun, very strange game. This is a very GameCube era game.
Mm-hmm. So next is Eeyore's level, finally.
Yes, Eeyore's level is so good.
It's so good. It's probably my favorite one, not just because of, like, all the imagery, but it has some of my favorite theming relating to the character.
Yeah, it starts out in, like, a haunted woods looking location with a lot of the, like, you know, the, like, harsh angled trees and such. Also, the first enemy you have to face is literally a scary tree that when you walk to the right, you see the branches first and hear the tree first before you see the tree. And, like, it's not like, again, as an adult, it's not a particularly scary tree, but, like, the effect is so,
yeah,
is so palpable.
Yeah, I realized this playing a later level, I think it was Tigger's Dream, that they kind of have jump scares in a way. A lot of times enemies will start off screen when you first enter the room, so you only, like, hear them and maybe feel the ground shaking as they're moving. And then, like, you come into view and you just see it chase after you, and it's like, great, great, cool. So you start out outside and you see Eeyore's house, which is, as always, a bunch of sticks. That's just canon.
Yep,
but Eeyore isn't anywhere to be found. So you find a key under the doormat, of course. You use the key to get a bell, you ring the bell, and then a secret passageway opens up, sort of on the ground under Eeyore's house, that leads to this underground stairwell, which, by the way, implies that Eeyore is locked down in his house, in his mansion. I didn't catch that until recently. Like, wait a minute. He couldn't get out. Huh.
Well, provisions have run low.
And then he walks outside only to get hit by a train. It's a video game. That's a fun reference.
This is the level that has the Dutch angle.
Yes, it's so good. If you're going to look up any level from this game, look up Eeyore's level, especially this room when you first go downstairs. It is a straight hallway with, like, two Heffalumps just marching down it. And the camera angle is so, steep that, like, you're essentially a tiny bug on the ground looking up, again, at an angle that only gets more sort of downward as you progress through the hallway until the Heffalumps come into view. It's so good.
It's so good. It's so good. Up. And so when you go inside, Eeyore is there, and to sort of speed through it a little bit, the color from the area has been sapped out and is in three different locations. Each of the three rooms has a little puzzle, and when you complete that puzzle, it unlocks a room that's in a different area.
Yeah, there's like three wings.
Yeah, and so it's a fun little like, you know, go to this room, solve this puzzle. Go to the next room, solve this puzzle, go to the third room, which is open from the second room, etc. And so, yeah, it's a fun little, you know, A to B to C to B to A to C, etc. But you complete them. I don't know that it has anything new until you fight the boss.
Woozle type in the bathroom.
Right.
You fight Mirror Woozles, which suck.
Yes.
I hate these. Mirror Woozles, they're Woozles with, like, slick pompadours and a mirror because they're very narcissistic. And as you're fighting them, they will rotate the screen 90 degrees.
Yes.
And then, like, after a few seconds, they'll rotate it 90 degrees in a random direction again. And so this, at first, isn't bad, but around now is when they start introducing directional inputs to go with your button inputs. So, yes. Like, you have to mentally readjust the direction, which is much harder for me than just, like, reading the buttons sideways.
Yeah, yeah. The buttons are not hard to read. Like, on the GameCube, they have distinct shapes, and on the PlayStation 2, they have distinct colors.
And
but
shapes.
The directions are, like, so annoying to, like, mentally readjust and think, okay, so because it's right and it's upside down, it's now left, and so... But I have to do that for five different fucking buttons.
Yeah. Eeyore's level has a lot going on. He is depressed. That's Eeyore's gimmick.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, you know, he comes in, it's all missing colors. You have to get the color back. There's, like, some pretty dark jokes in here. Like, one of the colors, the red color, is in a wine bottle that needs to be uncorked. You know, it's like red wine.
I will defend that it could be like a ship bottle. I think it is.
Oh, okay, that one's
that
probably
a bottle.
That's probably a ship in a bottle, but it does have a cork that you need a wine screw to unscrew.
Yes, that is what I won't defend, is that one of the areas is like this little like garden courtyard thing that has a wine cork, and it clearly has wine.
Yeah,
that from like Chateau Bourosque or something like that, like Donkey Chateau, which is a cute joke, but like also, you know,
I want to go to Eeyore's winery.
Oh god, I bet he makes the best fucking wine.
Yeah, but like, yeah, he also I just want to, in my notes, for some reason I wrote Poe reference. Like Cask of Montiato. So, you know, maybe there's something weird going on there. But yeah, like, he's a wine drinker. There's just, like, wine bottles and stuff all around the place in wine glasses. One of the rooms is like a dining room. And there's only one chair at the main dining table. And it's at the head of the table. But that seat does not have any table setting. Whereas every other seat has dishes. And now, I didn't check how many dishes there were on the table, but I feel like this is like Eeyore's inner torment of seemingly all his friends having what they want and he unable to.
Yeah, yeah. You can absolutely get very, very psychoanalytical with this.
Yeah. The bathroom, then, is, I believe, right past the dining room. And the bathroom, you are required to... Or no, it's not past the dining room. But no, you're required to, like... plug a bunch of holes in the pipes so that it all busts out of one pipe on the wall and you can get the like faucet handle.
Yes.
Which feels like Eeyore bottling up his emotions, if you know. I guess he bottles up the red. The yellow one, you have to burst a pipe and let it flow out. And the blue one is art. There's a bunch of paintings on the wall. And
a bunch of paintings that have Eeyore's head.
Yes, it is very
like,
good.
You know, Eeyore's head over the Mona Lisa and things like that.
Eeyore's head over American Gothic, which they use twice. I'll get to that later. In the art room also, there is like a it almost looks like a terrarium, but it's like a display case with wooden models of Eeyore's friends in there.
Yes.
Which is also, they kind of look creepy and uncanny. But one thing I kind of love is, since red, blue, and yellow are the only ones you actually get back, the only character who's able to restore their color is Pooh.
Yeah. Like, you get Pooh's color and, like, maybe, like, Rue's shirt, I think. I think one of them has, like, one other splotch of color.
Rue is not in the terrarium because he is outside the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Which brings up the other thing that I slightly wondered about, and there's no answer here. So, okay, Piglet goes into the dreams. That's game logic, sure. I'm not gonna litigate that. What I do question is, like, all of the other dreams have a bunch of the other characters. Like, you know, Rue's dream has Tigger, and you know, one of the, like, the first character you meet in Pooh's dream is Owl, and then obviously Rabbit is there. And so, like, I have to assume it's, like, all of them have their own dream versions of these characters. Because, like, they don't seem to have overlapping knowledge or anything. But it is a consistent thing where, like, every new level I would be like, ah, you're here. I wonder what's up with that.
Yeah. It's also, so, you know, you mentioned Tigger is in Rue's dream, but when you're playing the game, Tigger has not gone to sleep until you've beaten both Owl and Eeyore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so, another, like, yeah, fold in the equation. I also wanted to mention that there is a music room as well, where flipping the paintings in the art room writes a painting that you can walk into Mario style, and there's a music room, and you have to collect quills in another sort of chase sequence. It's very annoying. I do like that Eeyore is shown to have this, like, expressive artist side. He is, like, a pretty chill guy. It's like, if he had a house, he would definitely be more fulfilled. But also, like, he has all these artistic drives that just aren't being met.
I think the real message here is that what ultimately stifles a lot of creative types is not necessarily one particular, internal thing, but it's not having a safety system, not having housing, not having, you know, what have you. It's ultimately what stifles a lot of the great artists that could be. If I'm allowed to get on my leftist soapbox and extrapolate from this game.
Yeah. Also, he can't have anything happy. He is in a very depressive spiral towards the end of the level. So you get all the colors back, but then the lights go out, so you have to borrow a candle from Rue. But when you turn the lights back on, a big door drops in the middle, and you have to get scary faces again.
And it's the same door, and this is the only character that has consistently, like, that consistently says, oh, it's you again.
Yeah. You beat the door, you fall into a hole, and you have to fight a new boss, which is a, a tuba elephant? Tuba heffalump?
Yes.
This is the other one that's also present in the original, like, short.
Yeah. His trunk, like, wraps around himself and then comes up to his shoulder like a tuba, which is a cute design choice, but also slightly horrifying.
Yeah.
This boss is a little annoying.
His mechanic is that if you wait too long, he will blow up your commands and you have to start over.
Yes. That isn't particularly annoying. What is annoying, though, is that you fight him in kind of like, you know, a blue lit room, and then you have to fight another one in a yellow room, and then you have to find another one in a red room, and all three of them are three input bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I get it, but I got it the second time, and I was like, oh god, I'm gonna have to do this all three, aren't I?
So yeah, like, even after you beat the door, you have to fall down three holes in order to actually get Eeyore back to, like, healthy, you know, and safe. It's a depressive spiral.
Yeah, it's very Silent Hill.
Also, kind of an interesting parallel, whereas Owl's dream was very high up, Eeyore's dream is down low. You go underground and then you keep going. Oh, also you go underground via a spiral staircase.
Ah!
Downward spiral. I just noticed that.
Yeah, Eeyore's dream is top tier.
Yeah.
It is honestly the peak of the game. The other dreams are not terrible by any means. Well, I think Rabbit's is my least favorite, and it's the one we're going to talk about next, so let's get into that, I guess.
Yeah, I did want to mention one thing, though, which is that this is maybe the only dream that has anything to do with Piglet's Big Movie. One of the stories in Piglet's Big Movie is everyone helping out Eeyore to build a big house. And I think, like, something breaks and it doesn't work anyways, but this is, like, the only one that has anything close to that movie.
I I'm sorry, I'm just sitting here going, man, I love Eeyore.
Mm-hmm.
Not even specifically in this game, just, you know, shout outs to Eeyore.
Yeah, he's great. So,
yeah, all right, so yeah. Within the story, within the, like, literal, like, cutscenes every two levels, the thing that changes between the next two, which is Owl and Eeyore, and Rabbit and Tigger's level, is that it starts to rain. And so for Rabbit, he's like, oh, it's raining. My carrots are going to get ruined by the rain.
My crops are
going to
get wet.
Yeah, my carrots are going to get wet, I guess. And so, like, he, you know, runs up forward and, like, accidentally hits his head and, you know, falls asleep. And Tigger, as he is, like, painting his house, he, like, accidentally jumps into his paint and then, like, you know, kicks it up and it ends up splashing on him and he becomes fully orange. And he's like, oh, no, I lost my stripes. Then he, like, you know, conks out as well as the rain, like, then washes away all the paint and his stripes come back, of course. That leads into their respective dreams, which are about getting all of the carrots and getting Tigger's stripes back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Rabbit, you know, he's very, I don't want to say OCD, but I think oftentimes the which Winnie the Pooh character with a, you know, mental disability are you, usually puts Rabbit as that. Or
yeah,
just like
he's very neurotic, and I think, yeah, like, some kind of OCD tendencies.
Yeah. So this is represented by Rabbit having this, like, fancy automated farm with all these machines to do everything. But of course it doesn't work. Rabbit is trapped in the mud by his own machine. And yeah, you have to go and fix the machines through a lot of different means. There is a... There's like a furnace you have to get going. There's a bunch of switches you have to press. There's some gears you have to repair. There's a hose that you have to fix. Just kind of everything, really.
Basically, Piglet is just kind of creating the machine. The game actually essentially turns into Factorio.
Yeah. It's interesting because sort of the theme here with Rabbit is that Rabbit is out of control completely. Rabbit feels out of control, like he's only just sort of going on for a ride. Like, he goes from being stuck in the mud to being stuck on a conveyor belt to being stuck in a minecart that Piglet then has to direct through his garden. So I think that's sort of interesting that, like, Rabbit's mindset of feeling like he is completely at sway of the forces of nature, and that, like, his agency is being tested and being punished, is, like, a thing in this dream.
Yeah, like, it's technically not wrong vis-a-vis the dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting another little thing of, like, the monkey's paw, where, like, theoretically within the dream he has the machinery that all does everything that he wants to do automatically, but because it's not working, like, it's clearly not doing anything until Piglet actually comes along and fixes all the machinery parts. Specifically near the end, when you have to do the minecart things, every time he comes to a new area, he bumps into, like, the next roadblock, and he I think says the exact same line every time, that's like, oh, Piglet, you have to jump on the logs to make sure that I can go through. Like, literally the exact, I'm fairly certain they just copy and pasted the same soundbite every time. Yeah. Which I just kind of find adorable and hilarious.
Something kind of fun, these two levels have a little bit of foreshadowing, where their levels have essentially, like, two acts, and the puzzle items for the second act appear in the first act. In this case, you follow the entire minecart path to get an item, like a key or something, and you see those logs all on the ground, and I was just like, so those are going to be used for something, but I have no idea what, because it's been forever since I played this. And so when it actually comes back around, it's this really cool Chekhov's gun moment of just like, oh, okay. Also, Gopher is here, and actually a thing that makes a lot of sense, which is that Gopher, his tunnels rely on the integrity, like the structure of Rabbit's farm. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that tracks.
That's really cute.
Yeah. This is probably the least fantastical dream. Most of it is, like, just kind of normal. If you told me that this was Piglet and Rabbit being awake, I would believe you. Except for, like, one of the much later areas where it's, like, a beanstalk that grows, and then you go up and there's a garden in the sky.
Yes.
And there's, like, a little Sokoban puzzle there. probably the most involved Sokoban puzzle in the game. But other than that, it's pretty grounded, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
It would be a little bit high tech level for Winnie the Pooh, but it like you said, if there was like a short that was like, you know, Rabbit being like, I've invented, you know, something that will automate my farm, and then it like, oh, it all goes awry, like I would 100% see that just being an episode of Disney's Pooh.
It might have been, honestly. I know there is one episode where Gopher makes a giant scaffolding of wood and then it all comes crumbling down. Tumbling down, tumbling down,
tumbling down, tumbling down.
Yeah.
I love Evangelion.
In my notes, by the way, I wrote down Piglet goes to the big farm in the sky, colon, open parentheses. One really nifty thing. So the furnace room, you know, there's a circular room with a big thing in the middle. I think that that is the same room as the one in Pooh's like cake house. That those are those are both dream interpretations of Rabbit's house, quote unquote, IRL, in waking life, I guess. And that this is the two characters sort of reimagining of them.
Yeah.
Which, of course, again, is, you know, Pooh breaking into Rabbit's house and getting his ass painted.
Submitted for the approval of the Midnight Club Society.
That's not what it is, but okay.
The furnace room.
It's a bunch of racing sim fans.
Yeah. Get out of here, chill. Nondescript top 10 YouTuber. One day, a guy accidentally went into his furnace, and then it turned out...
Wasn't that like the short movie before, like, Finding Nemo? There was a Pixar short movie like that.
A guy goes into his furnace?
Well, into his oven, but yeah.
Oh, you might be thinking of Hansel and Gretel, the children's book.
Yeah, famously Disney did adapt that before Incredibles, I think. No, yeah, so it's a level, all right. It does introduce a new enemy in the Jackpot Heffalump.
Yes, yeah, the Jackpot Heffalump, their thing is, like, they kind of, like, re-roll your inputs, and one of them, I believe at least one of them, is always a question mark.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of like try it a couple times.
Yeah. Whereas normally the inputs are kind of displayed one by one and you can do them pretty quickly if you just read them one at a time. The Jackpot Heffalump stands still for a moment and does like a little jackpot spin for all the commands. So you get less time to read them one by one. And yeah, one of them is a question mark that you have to guess. It's a little annoying.
It makes sense as a natural progression, but it's, you know, Rabbit's level, I would say, is probably the low point of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's not terrible. It's just sort of like, you know, it's a level.
Also, something I think is fun, by the way, this is the first time you see the tuba, the, like, marching band Heffalumps out in the wild. And they're always sleeping.
Yeah!
Which I think is funny. They're
if just a Heffalump tired is from asleep marching. In a dream, does that mean it's awake in the real world?
Oh, no. Inception? No, yeah. I want to go to Tigger's Dream because this is much more interesting.
Yes.
So this is kind of a giant reference to the Tigger movie. Again, that's why Roo features heavily here because Tigger and Roo are very tied together. The Tigger movie is about Tigger in his identity. You know, his catchphrase is the wonderful thing about Tiggers is I'm the only one, but he never really explains what a Tigger is. The Tigger movie has a lot of him sort of realizing that maybe he is lonely being the only one. He kind of wonders for a long time about his family tree and about his family. All the artwork that is present in his house of like the different like paintings and stuff recreated with Tigger are just screens from that song. The family tree song from the Tigger movie. It's literally just screen caps, just like cells.
Nice. Nice.
And here, obviously, he loses a part of himself. And that aspect of, like, losing himself in his identity terrifies him. Sort of almost in, like, a dysphoria way. I can say that, personally. It's super
that's
interesting.
That's a good angle. That's a really interesting angle, yeah.
He hides away because he doesn't want to be seen, you know, without his stripes. Which is, the entire environment has stripes just to taunt him.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, the funny monkey's paw thing here is that practically everything else in the environment, like the cliffs and the trees and everything else has stripes in it.
Yeah.
Except for, like, the snow, but it's snow.
Yeah. It's still ironic in that he is unique, but in reverse, in a way that he does not enjoy.
Actually, it's very interesting that you go from an area that has a whole lot of striped things to the snowy areas, which obviously do not have as much of that.
Mm-hmm.
That could be another little psychology thing of, like, because he is, you know, missing his stripes, he goes mentally towards an area that has less of them.
Yeah. You do have to go through the snow to reach Tigger's house through the back door. And Tigger is not only sort of trapped by his own fears and sort of his dysphoria about not having stripes, but also he does have a giant balloon blocking his treehouse door. So he is double trapped.
Yeah.
Something kind of funny. So Tigger's dream is themed around four seasons, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter. And the one Tigger lives in is spring. Get it? Spring? Get it? You like it? Spring? Because he bounced?
I know that there's one moment, I will admit, I watched a long play for the latter, like, last two little things of this game. But there's one moment where once you find out the thing with the ball, that or, like, the balloon that's trapping him, you have to grab a magnet that's in his room and go all the way through the rest of the entire level. Until you get to, like, the very first area where you can use the magnet to grab a dart that you then use to open up the area with the balloon.
It's not the first area. It's, so Tigger's house creates a loop with the snow area, the winter, where you go from the front door to winter one to winter two, which is like a hedge maze, to his back door, to his house. So you leave, like, one way, or something like that, and then that lets you go to the hedge maze again.
So it isn't a full backtrack at the very least. Okay, that is good.
Yeah. Now, when I played this, I had, like, pressed the exit dream button to try to, like, quick travel, and I realized I didn't need to do that. I could have just walked out backwards again. So that was kind of annoying. I kind of did backtrack all the way, but on accident. Also, this level does have another poo section, and I should have mentioned that Rabbit has another Tigger section. There is also a carnival in the fall area, the autumn area, and the carnival is, like, very derelict and run down. To me, so there's sort of a reoccurring thing in Tigger's level where you have to do a lot of playing like Tigger. To reach winter, you have to rotate a carousel until the carousel starts working. To reach, I want to say, part of fall, you need to fly across a gap with balloons, and then, like, there's popping the balloon using a dart from a carnival game, which is like a carnival game where you throw a dart to pop a balloon.
Then
you go down a slide when you leave his house. There's a lot of, oh, and to enter his house, you create, like, this spring flower that you bounce on. So there's a lot of fun and games to be had in his level. But the carousel, or the carnival, the place that is the epitome of fun, is run down. And I think it's because Tigger, you know, is not feeling it. He's not his normal sort of manic happy state.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he is not feeling the wonderful thing about Tigger at this moment. But eventually he does.
There's this fun side quest once you reach the carnival. Oh yeah, it also introduces the, like, sweeping the broom heffalump, which I think appears literally once in the whole game. The broom heffalump, its thing is that it will sweep when the wind blows, and that makes some of the like, the commands sort of go in and out of invisibility. They'll become kind of transparent and then not transparent in different patterns. But it's pretty easy to deal with. When you reach the carnival, there is a haunted house that Rue shows you that you need to gather these four, like, tablets to open. Rue has the one for spring already, and you need to get the ones for summer, winter, and autumn. And it shows you, like, what enemy you have to fight to get the tablet. This is the Act 2 puzzle, quote-unquote. The tablet appears on, like, a pedestal in the room with the enemy. Something kind of nifty, though, the spring pedestal is broken. Because it doesn't get a tablet, because Rue already had the tablet. It also shows an enemy that just does not appear in that room. So, yeah, I guess somehow somebody was able to take care of that half a lump early. Maybe Rue is secretly incredibly brave by this point.
Yeah, Rue has been inspired by Piglet.
Mm-hmm. So the end of Tigger's dream is you enter the haunted house and you gather his stripes for him, which are like invisible models with striped textures on them. So they're mostly see-through.
And yeah, yeah.
This was probably the most annoying chase sequence in the game for me.
There's a couple of moments where you have to, like, do that, the video game thing where you kind of, like sheep herd an enemy or an item into a corner to then grab it. And it's never really all that fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a little annoying.
Yeah.
And this looked like that was just that, but with, like, five different stripes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to corner them, really, and it gets hard to do that in some of these rooms. And they have a timer. Now, if time runs out, then it doesn't respawn all of them, it only respawns the ones you didn't catch. So, like, it's still fine, it's just annoying more than anything. The haunted house is just, like, a bunch of other, like, Tigger memorabilia. It's, like, a bust of, like, a Julius Caesar Tigger, one of, like, a Pharaoh Tigger. It's pretty great, it's pretty interesting that this is the haunted house.
Wait a minute, I thought he was the only one.
Exactly, it's spooky, they're ghosts, maybe they're all dead. Is this like an Outer Wilds thing where all the Tiggers died? I don't know why I said Outer Wilds specifically, but that's what I'm going with.
Well, that is the, Outer Wilds famously is the only game that has extinction as a core thing about it.
Hold on,
actually the only piece of media.
Spoiler alert for Outer Wilds, I guess, but the main Nomai.
I don't actually know.
Oh, here, just close your eyes for like 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah, of
yes,
course.
I said close your eyes.
No, my eyes are closed.
There's quantum Schrodinger's death, Schrodinger's cat, Tigger's a tiger, tigers are cats. We've explained it. Tigger's both alive and dead.
Oh, we got it. And that's why he's the only one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get the stripes back to Tigger, but by the time you reach his treehouse, he has run away and locked himself in the haunted house again. So you go there, there's another door, it's the last door of the game. You fight it, you win, you go inside the haunted house, and you fight three tennis woozles.
Yes, tennis woozles. Is this a reference to something?
I don't think so.
It's such a strange, like, final enemy. Well, not exactly final enemy, but, like, final normal enemy to introduce is the tennis woozles.
My guess is that the modelers made a model for a mirror, and they were like, hey, can we just, like, reuse this model somehow? And they retexture it as a tennis racket. That's the only guess I have.
Yeah, that would make the most sense.
They have, like country club hats that are, like, these plaid hats on. They're very bougie. You know,
this game is very anti-capitalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're even, like, invading Tigger's family just to, like, play some tennis. The tennis woozle mechanic is that every now and then they will smack one of the commands and change it to something else.
Yeah, it's, you know, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, but it also feels like the kind of thing that, like, isn't, like, it feels like it's a mechanic that should come a little earlier. Feels like an enemy that, like, if that one had just been, like, lifted and replaced with, like, honestly, if you flipped that one and the like, slot machine Heffalump,
yeah,
I feel like that would have been a lot more natural of a progression.
And then you would have had the tennis woozles in Rabbit's Dream, where it's outdoors, and the slot machine in Tigger's Dream, which is all fun and games until it gets too much.
Yeah.
It would have been very poignant.
Take note, game developers.
Yeah.
When you release Piglet's Big Game 2...
They already did. It's called Pooh's Rumbly Tumbly Adventure.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, yeah. Tigger's Dream, pretty cool. A lot of references if you're an old-time fan. And then we go into the final level. So, when I said that this game was heavily based on Pooh's Blustery Day, it's not just the Heffalumps. It is this level.
Yes. This was a shock to me to learn that this is how the final level ends up happening.
Yeah. The Hundred Acre Woods floods.
Yeah, remember when it was raining? It turns out it just starts flooding, and the narrator's like, uh-oh, all of his friends are still asleep. If Piglet doesn't do anything, then the whole 100-acre woods and his friends will be swept away. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, so in Pluto's blustery day, it does actually flood the 100-acre woods, and Piglet's house is destroyed. So that's a whole thing in Pooh's blustery day. So here, though, it's really interesting because it's, like, kind of waking life, but also the Heffalumps and Woozles are still there.
Yeah, it's... Okay, it has to be, like, awake times. But, like... And it's not just, like, you know, one specific Heffalump and Woozle. I guess if there is a Heffalump character, they're real things. Although it does also have, like, the slot machine Woozle and stuff. And so it's, like, a little question marky.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like, hand wave, you know?
They could be metaphors.
Now here is my biggest disappointment about this. So the challenge here is that, like, essentially everybody has their own individual problem that Piglet comes into, and they're all like, oh, Piglet, help me. And, you know, you, as Piglet, you end up helping them all. But Owl is one of the first three, because it goes essentially just in order of, like, you know, it's Pooh, Roo, and Owl, and then it's Eeyore, Rabbit, and Tigger. But the way that you help Owl is by, you grab his memory book and you yell to him, like, hey, I'm looking through your memory book, and it shows that you're escaping these people by, it shows you escaping monsters by flying. And I was like, oh, right, I could fly. And I was kind of hoping that the other ones would end up being a similar thing, where it's like Piglet, like, helps them by kind of, like, essentially giving them the means to help themselves. But, like, Owl is the only one that he does that with. Like, the other challenges are basically just him, like, finding some kind of way to get to where the people are and then defeating the Heffalumps and Woozles for them.
Yeah, you get to them via the thing you got to help them in the dream. So, like,
yes,
for Pooh,
which is fun.
For Pooh, you find a honeypot and you use that as, like, a boat. For Roo, you use his ball to knock over a log to use as a bridge. But yeah, it's not like, it doesn't have that beat of, like, they're able to help themselves now to be brave.
Yeah. Although it does mean that Piglet ends up being the ultimate hero.
Mm-hmm. As you go through, yeah, an enemy gauntlet.
Yep. You go through basically the, like you said, the enemy gauntlet. It's, I believe it is essentially just one of every enemy by that point.
Except the broom. There's no broom. No broom Heffalump, and I don't think there's a regular Woozle, but they have everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something really fucked up about this level, which is that your friends can die. Yeah, so every enemy is slowly approaching the friend that is trapped on their little island. They usually do this in sort of a zigzag pattern, and if you are too slow, then they will just straight up, like, get scared by the Heffalump or Woozle, and you'll have to start over from that trio. Or no, you start the whole level over. This gave my mom a really hard time when I was a kid, and so it was, like, a really hard level back then. But now I'm just, like, I did lose once, but it was because I forgot the whole thing about Owl, so I left him to be the last one, and he died. So I was like, well, okay, I guess I do that first. But yeah, so that's the whole thing, is, like, if you're too slow, then you have to start over. And I don't really know how lenient it is. I can say that in the, like, second set of three, I did fine by leaving Rabbit to be the last one, but I didn't really try to leave Eeyore to be last. You have to do Tigger before you can do Rabbit, though.
Yeah, the long play that I watched, like, left Rabbit essentially for a really long time. And Rabbit has, like, doesn't Rabbit have, like, four different enemies on him, too, or something?
Rabbit has a tuba Heffalump and a slot machine Heffalump, but the tuba one is asleep. So he really only has one that tries to kill him.
Yeah.
They generally try to match up the enemies as best as they can to where they came from. So, like, Tigger has the tennis Woozle, Eeyore has the narcissist Woozle, and Rabbit has the slot machine Woozle, or Heffalump. Yeah. And then, like, Roo has the
Kanga is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, Kanga and Gopher are fine. Also, I do want to note how funny it is that So to get to Rabbit's Island, you have to grab one carrot, put it on his wheelbarrow of carrots, which causes the wheelbarrow to topple over and lose all the carrots.
Yeah.
So oops, yeah. Sorry, Rabbit. But hey, you're alive.
That got a really big fucking laugh out of me.
Yeah.
And then...
And then you fight an actual final boss, the scariest thing. It's a fucking weird shadow. But this is also a reference.
Ah.
I believe it's a reference to Skull from Pooh's Grand Adventure. You see, Pooh's Grand Adventure, they thought that Christopher Robin was going to leave for Skull. And so they try to go to Skull and they end up in this creepy cave. And then Christopher Robin finds him. And he's like, no, I meant school. I have to go to school, but it's okay. I'll be back. So it's very sweet. But yeah, like when they're in the cave, they keep thinking they're seeing these like creepy monsters about to eat them and they get lost and all that. And so I'm pretty sure that's what this final boss is referring to.
Yeah. It looks like one of the creepy trees from earlier turned right at the bottom of the staircase and became a shadow monster man.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah, it's like slowly approaching. I assume there's like a fail state, but I desperately tried to find a video that was like Piglet's big game losing in the final battle, and I could not find one.
I mean, I beat it on my first try because I was like, I don't want to have to go back through the rest of that level again. I have
That's
a podcast
very
to record.
True. Yeah, I have things to do.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end, Christopher Robin comes back. Everyone has a party. Piglet's a big hero. They eat food and a picnic.
Yeah, he's like, you all must be very hungry after that. Christopher Robin's sort of like, you know, oh, Piglet, you were so brave there. And Piglet's like, oh, I was just listening to you. And he's like, nonsense. That was all within your heart. Now you all must be hungry. And they have a picnic. And,
yeah, I guess
it's real fun and cute.
I guess the Christopher Robin balloon is Piglet's mind version of Christopher Robin, right?
That would make sense, because, like, otherwise Christopher Robin is a dreamwalker.
I mean, Piglet is, so who's to stop Christopher Robin? He created Piglet. Have you seen Pooh Ball? Honestly, the Pooh Ball memes of Christopher Robin being this, like, universe destroyer just makes his appearance in this game more funny. Piglet's like, well, I'm glad everything's okay, but I wonder where Christopher Robin is, and you see him just, like, come over the crest of the horizon.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, he's gonna kill him. You forgot one, Piglet.
Silly old bear. I've brought you into this world, and I can take you out of it.
39 out of 40. So yeah, but little did you know, there's a post-game.
Oh!
You see, if you 100% a level... then you can go back and do the bravest of them all mode, where it's essentially a time trial to kill every enemy in the level. And when you enter a room with enemies, they run away from you.
Oh, nice, nice. This is sort of the god mode afterwards, mm-hmm. where they're all like, oh shit, it's the big brave man.
It's the big pig.
It's the big pig. Piglet's pig game.
So, we've been going at this for pretty long. There are a few things I want to touch on, though, about this game's themes and all that. So, one thing we didn't really mention, by the way, is that when there is an NPC in a room, no enemies will spawn there. However, if the NPC were to leave due to you completing a quest, monsters will spawn there later. So there's, like, very few actual safe rooms. Which yeah. I think added to sort of the panic I felt, like, oh god, nowhere is safe.
But it is always safe if a friend is there.
Exactly. Yeah. So this game is so wild to me. As we have mentioned, it is this very tightly woven, like, Psychonauts-esque dreams becoming nightmares, monkey's paw style. It's created clearly by people who have a lot of reverence for the series and the property and the characters. The characters are well written. They're voice acted by their cartoon voice actors. You know, like Jim Cummings plays Pooh. And so, like, that's really, really cool that they have the actual voice actors.
Yeah, yeah. Take it from two longtime fans of SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom, or at least one of them. I assumed you are.
Yeah.
As well. But having the original voice cast is not always a guarantee in these types of games.
I mean, for most Disney games, it's not.
Yeah, and so the fact that all of them are there just kind of adds to the charm, honestly.
Especially when it comes to like celebrity voice actors, like Tom Hanks in Toy Story, you know, then Woody is played by his brother in most media that's not the actual movie.
I think Jim Hanks is Tom Hanks's brother.
Maybe.
Which is some fucking Waluigi and Luigi-ass stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, like, obviously Buzz isn't played by Tim Allen in most media. But for, like, career voice actors, you usually see them do the same voices in, like, the games. I think BFBB is a little different for other reasons, but it is very cool, though. I think, like, as much as it is a survival horror game, like, we talked in the last episode when we were talking about Mario 64 about sort of kid survival horror, and I'm obviously not a psychologist, so don't quote me on this, but from what I've read, the idea is that kids like having situations that can challenge them, that they can then overcome, that dealing with something like a horror situation is actually healthy for kids to some extent, because it helps them learn how to deal with anxiety and fear. And something we've discussed on the stream as we were playing this game was that's sort of Winnie the Pooh as a whole. The reason why there's so many comparisons between the characters and like mental disabilities, things like, you know, depression and anxiety and all that, is because the characters kind of help kids learn that these things that might seem like these huge battles you're fighting by yourself are normal, and with other people you're able to go through them much easier.
Yeah, it's kids horror is like kids horror games is kind of its own topic as far as like modern kids horror games and things like that, but the idea of horror that is more or less specifically aimed at children, or even like in this case, I wouldn't even say this is intended to be a horror game so much as it's intended to be a spooky game. But, like, the idea of spooky games that are targeted specifically towards children is ultimately a good thing. We like, during the stream and a little bit here, we did play up a little bit of the, like, you know, holy shit, why did they do this? But, like, at the end of it, it's genuinely a really good product, and like while it is scary and certainly would be scary to a younger child, I think that it's ultimately still a really good exercise in, like, you know, you give kids something that's a little bit scary that helps them, you know, recognize what something being scary is and helps them recognize, ah, but this is what helped me through it.
Right. For being a scary game for kids, the message in the actual mechanics are about facing your fears.
Yeah.
You both put on a brave face to fight them, show that they're actually not scary and that they're just silly, and you literally have to face towards them in order to engage in combat.
Yeah. I do love the little thing where, like, Piglet is faced towards the screen, away from the enemy, but once you complete the animation, he obviously turns around to give them the big scary face of, like, aha, you thought you were the big scary thing, but I am the one who is going to spook you.
I am the one who knocks. Piglet, we need to cook.
Oh, dear. Christopher Robin. No, yeah, this, I mean, you know, all that being said, this game did scar me for life as a kid, but I was also scared very easily. I was scared of the music for Hang Castle from Sonic Heroes. I was scared of the Monkey Ball announcer going, hurry up! So, yeah, you know, I'm not probably the best case example of this type of thing.
That's fair. What I would offer is that, like, I think every kid is going to have something like that sort of thing that, like, sticks in their head where they're, like, you know, they're constantly like, yo, no, the scariest thing as a kid was, like, for me, it was, like, reading TV Tropes entries of, like, media that was definitely not kid-friendly.
Yeah.
And, like, not actually looking up the media because I was too scared of the idea, but because of that, the idea in my head was like, oh god, this is the most scary thing. But yeah. Like, eventually, you know, eventually you grow up and you go back to things like that. And, you know, you'll look back on various things like that and go, actually, this wasn't all that scary, and in fact, there's something interesting here about it as well.
Yeah, that's why this has been so cathartic, is that it went from this, like, scary thing to this weird thing to, like, something that I could actually find depth in and find a lot of appreciation for.
Yeah.
I don't know where it would rank on my favorite games. Probably in, like, the 40th, like, tier, you know? Not quite in the top 10 at all. Not the top 20. But after that, it gets kind of screwy, and it might have a spot there. It definitely means a lot, and I definitely don't understand why they made it.
Yeah. It's a game that I wonder why they made it, but also that's partially why I love this era of video games as well.
They made two, even.
Yeah, they made two of them, and that's amazing. It got out of hand. There were two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the GameCube era because there's a lot of things that seem to have been made just because. And I think that's, like, I'm not going to sit here and bemoan modern day. I think that a lot of indie games are picking up that label of, like, why did you make this weird game? Because I wanted to. But, like, you know, there's something magical about that era of, like, you know, big companies doing weird little experimental projects. And this is just sort of a fun prime example of that era.
Mm-hmm. It's a very, very, very neat. Please give us a third one so that we can have three of them, much like we have three people here sitting around this campfire.
That's right. I've been here the whole time. I'm finally done drinking my big water.
That's very good for you, hyper-realistic Mario.
Yeah, hopefully we have something else to put out the fire now, because I'm not going to be stomping on those wood, that kindling.
Yeah, God, if only we had a character who was well-known for pissing.
I guess we'll have to keep looking. Until then, yep. We are NetSurfer Pro. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro, where we tweet teasers on our upcoming episodes. We have two more episodes left for Spooky Month. Keep an eye out and check out those teasers, and maybe you might figure something out. One of them, I had to use very similar symbol language as the one for this episode, so maybe you'll catch that trend and piece together a puzzle there. We also, of course, post alerts for our new episodes. You can also follow us on any podcasting platform you like to get updates on when we get new episodes out. You can leave us a comment, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know if there's any subjects you'd be interested in us checking out. And let us know what you were scared of when you were a kid.
Yes, tell us your greatest fear, if you could.
Tell me all your thoughts on God. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Twackaroo. That's Twack, TWAKAROO. I tweet out my takes on stuff going on. There was a new Rivals patch, so it's been a lot of stuff related to that. Nice. I post funny stuff sometimes, and I tweet about all my projects, as well as when I go live on my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/twack. I did not stream this. I will be streaming the next video game we cover for our podcast, that's the word. And on November, let me get this right, 11th, 14th, 16th, and 18th, I will be doing charity streams for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Because nice. November is Diabetes Awareness Month, and of course I am a type 1 diabetic, and so this is a cause that means a lot to me, and I love raising money for it. I'll be doing Fortune Street, a humongous entertainment game, not sure which one, but it'll be, you know, whatever the next one is. And then two randomizers that I'm really excited to try out on stream. So keep an eye out for that when it happens. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm also quite excited to see what will happen. I'm also excited for the next video game stream that you are doing for this podcast, because if not in voice, I will probably be there in chat, you know, commenting on it and such. So look forward to that. As for myself, you can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWILS0N. I post my hot takes and sometimes funny videos on my TikTok. You should probably just follow my TikTok. I'm a lot more positive on my TikTok, I would say. Which I'm not always positive on my TikTok, which should tell you what it's like on my Twitter. As for anything else, you can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I'll have a video one of these days. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I've tried to get streaming more. Obviously, I streamed this, but I'm trying to, you know, just sort of stream in general a little bit more, get myself out there a bit. Hopefully, my artist will get done with my PNG tuber model, and so I can have something that doesn't look like the the MS Paint Adventures face as my little PNG tuber thing.
Yeah, you do not want to be associated with that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Your name is Galen Wilson. It's with two N's. But yeah, aside from that, that's pretty much everything I have. And I honestly think we need to stop turning away people here at the 0 o'clock AM club because we've only got three members.
Yeah, I think the next time, though... Next person that shows up, I'll probably just let them in anyways, because yeah, it is getting a little too boring here with just us three.
Yeah, it really is boring here. Although I will say, you know, this kind of... No, I can't complete the quote.
I just wonder what Ganon's up to.